It is time for Arts Live and Local. This is Carol, your host. Got some exciting stuff for you today. I've got some music. This just walked in the door today. I am delighted. It's Lauren Kinnon's brand new, yes, 2014 release. Can't get newer than that. And here it is at your community radio station. Thanks to the family. Let's hear a tune. We've got a Pocket Full of Harlem lined up. Thanks. KMUN KTCB.
Spoken like a man means, pocket full of Harlem dreams. Kinks inside the armor, cool affecting his disarming of a certain satin doll, as stubborn as days were long. Hot the humid weather melts the science she's pretending. Dangerous and debonair, call the devil, he may care. No stranger to friction, an imposter for a living, following a nightingale, enchanting the ne'er-do-well. No one saw it coming, is undoing by her charm.
Is Lauren Kinnon. The album is Circle in a Square, and we've been listening to A Pocket Full of Harlem. Beautiful stuff. And we are fortunate to have we have several artists like this in this area where we they have family in the area, and we get lucky enough to have them come to town. So Lauren comes into our area and brings musicians with her from New York, which is where she's based. So thanks for the new album. And speaking of new, something happened here about 15, 16 years ago that was new to us. But I believe that it was based on something that had been going on for a longer period. I'm talking about Fisher Poets Gathering, which happens at the end of February every year. It's become such a tradition, people don't realize it's relatively new. So I think it was based on the cowboy poets in Elko, Nevada. And I have here in the room two gentlemen who are gearing up, raising money, having fun to get to go there, and one of them is Seaside High School teacher Mark Mizell, who I think, it was it you who started this whole thing?
Going? It started The first trip we went on was, it was over 20 years ago, I think. And it was John Broderick and my wife and I. And we had a group of 25 or so. And
25 students?
25 students. Wow. And as a matter of fact, this is something probably your music folks would appreciate. Israel Nebaker was in that first group. And, of course, Israel is, you know, has his own band, Blind Pilot.
Right.
Well, he was in that group, and it was really a fun bunch. It was just so much fun.
Where did this come from? Now, what do you teach at the high school?
You know what was funny? Okay, John and I, we saw that Arlo Guthrie was going to be at the Cowboy Poetry Festival. And we thought, well, let's... Because we both like Arlo Guthrie. Sure. Figured, let's get a group together. Let's go down there. Oh, Arlo Guthrie never showed up.
Oh, my goodness.
But
20-some years later.
but it was such a hoot. I mean, and there were so many things that happened, you know, in the peripheral. I mean, just the train ride down was
okay,
was
so amazing. So you teach what at the high school?
Mostly ninth grade English.
Ninth grade English, and mm-hmm. John was teaching
French. French and English.
Okay. Uh-huh. So do you just put this out to your students and say, who wants to go?
Yeah.
Okay. And before we go any further, I will introduce my second guest. Tim Berquist mm-hmm. is here. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
Is this your first time on KMUN?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, welcome for sure. Mark, you've been here before.
I've never been... Oh, excuse me. No, I've been here, and students have been doing stuff, but I just kind of I kind of watched, and that's what I'm hoping to do quite a bit of the time here, because I'd love to see Tim talk, and I'll just sit back and just watch him quake
and quake the airwaves, right? And we're going to do that, but I wanted to get some background on this, and I figured, Tim, what grade are you in this
year? I'm a senior this
year.
You
are a senior. Okay, so you've gone before.
No, this is my first time going.
Ooh, wow. What made you decide to go this year?
Well, I decided I wasn't going to do sports this year, and I was looking for an alternative to spend my winter break gearing up for. And at the beginning of the year, Mr. Mizell mentioned there was going to be a cowboy poetry festival, and I didn't really know what that was, but it sounded like a lot of fun to me.
Neither did anyone else when it first... What the heck? And do you write poetry?
I write a little bit myself, yeah.
And you are a musician?
Yes.
Okay. So you're in the arts, even though it turns out you're a jock as well, huh?
Yeah, just a little bit.
I didn't know that part. Okay, yeah. Okay. So, but you're following in the footsteps of many people. Do you find that most of the, do you only allow the upperclassmen to go?
It's open to the school. Anybody who wants to go can go. And, you know, back when Israel and that crew went, I think we might have had 30 kids that went. I don't know. This year we've got seven students and three chaperones. My wife, Becky, is going, and Tina Hess is going along.
Oh,
you know,
nice.
Tina, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think she said she used to do a dance
class. We used to dance together
with
Vicki Durst on a guitar. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fewer students. That's interesting, because I would think once the word got out, everybody would want to jump on this. But
well, it's you know, it takes some bucks, and mm-hmm. You know, to go that far, it just takes money
and time.
Yeah, time and money, and things are tight, and mm-hmm. Basically, you know, if you want to do the enrichment stuff, a lot of times. You know, you got to figure out a way to fund it. I mean, it's nobody's fault. I mean, it's just kind of the way things are, you know.
Well, we won't talk about fault and money in our society, because I don't want to get started.
But I would love to
see things like
but
this.
But I guess
fully
what I'm saying,
funded.
If I were a millionaire, if I won the lottery, I would put part of it in a field trip fund, and anybody who wants to go could come. You know?
Right.
But as it turns out, I mean, well, that's one of the reasons we're doing the fundraiser on Tuesday.
That's what's happening. And folks who listen to this show know that it's event-driven. So they have this coming Tuesday, the 14th, at 7, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Cannon Beach Chamber Building. The group is putting on, and this is in quotes, Letter Buck Chili Feed Review. And I'm going to ask Tim to tell us what the heck that is.
Well, basically, we're having an effort to raise some money for some of the kids who don't have quite enough to make it there on our own. And our culinary arts class at school offered to cook us a tremendous amount of chili. John Newman and his culinary arts students actually had a competition among the students to decide whose chili recipe they would use.
Wait a second. Does John Newman teach culinary arts at Seaside High School?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Holy cow, folks.
He's got kind of a funny last name, but other than that, he's a pretty decent guy.
Yeah, he cooks a lot better than I do, I can tell you that. John's got a couple of fabulous restaurants in Cannon Beach. I didn't know that he taught it. I knew that he used to teach at Tongue Point Job Corps, but wow, how lucky you are in Seaside.
Yeah,
so you're going to really have edible chili. I wasn't sure, you know. Whether,
yes.
Yeah. And then what else?
Well, we have some local music coming that Mr. Mizell could tell you about.
Are you part of that, though?
I will not be participating in the music, but I think Mizell, myself, and another student named Cameron have a few comedic skits coming up that we plan to perform.
Oh, so this is like a review. Well, that's what it's called, actually, Letterbuck Chili Feed Review.
Yeah.
So people get to eat and laugh at the same time. This could be... This could be a problem.
And throw chili at us if the stuff is bad enough.
I see. So who's going to be playing music?
Well, everybody in the group, all the students have something that they're doing.
So each one of the students who's going,
they're going to have some role. In some cases,
it's a
relatively small role, you know, and others are a little bit more involved, but some local musicians are gonna come in and play, and I want to give a shout out to them because they're donating their time and they are really wonderful musicians. Brad Griswold and Dave Quinton are gonna sing and play, and of course Brad plays a wonderful banjo, and Dave plays a wonderful guitar.
And by the way, speaking of Brad, he's playing with the Bar K Buckaroos tonight. All Buck Owens music starting at 9 at the Voodoo Room.
Yeah, my wife and I are heading down there. I'm not much of a late night person, but I'm going to come down there and cheer him on.
That's going to be funny. Okay.
And then Paul and Margot Duber are going to sing.
Yeah. Wonderful. And, Paul's been on this show.
It turns out Paul's a big-time Ian Tyson fan.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do a little songwriting workshop with Ian Tyson when we're down there. A Q&A session with Ian Tyson.
I don't know if Nevada.
Yeah, he's going to be there. I don't know if your listeners remember Ian and Sylvia or not, but
yes.
They were quite a...
Well, those of us old enough to, yes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And so now is this going to be another Arlo No Show, though, you think? Or?
Well, no, Arlo never made it. But as it turns out, there were some other people there that just blew us away. We went to see Arlo. Arlo never showed, but the best group, still one of the best groups I've ever seen down there, was Hot Club of Cowtown. They played down there. Have you ever heard those guys?
No, it's got a great name, though. Bring us their CD if you happen to see them.
I don't know if they're still making music or not. But anyway, Paul and Margot Duber, and then John Mercero and his daughter, Ashley Mercero, are going to be there. And Ashley went, she and Kate Ayers actually... Put it together one year. That was their Pacifica project, organizing the trip.
Oh, and that's quite a feat.
Anyway, this sounds fantastic. Yeah.
Tuesday evening now, should people just show up at the Cannon Beach Chamber Building at 7 or before 7?
Yeah, we'll be selling tickets there
at the door.
And then if people want to get tickets early, they can come to the high school and talk to Jeannie Romine. She's the business guru there at Seaside High School, and she's got tickets.
Now, I have to ask a question, and I don't know whether you guys know, but are you going to have vegetarian chili, too?
Holy smoke. You know, I thought about that.
I think you should probably find out.
I think you might want to suggest that at least a little bit for some people like myself who get to pay. I wouldn't want to show up at a Letterbuck chili feed review and find there was no chili for me.
That's a good idea. I'll ask you. Actually, I'm sure John's listening right now because he sent me an email today. So you'll probably get an email from him. And
to my cousin John. Okay,
yeah,
dear John. Okay, so Tim, the idea of going, you said you wanted something to do over the break. And so, by the way, when is that? When do you go? In February? Is that March?
End of the month. End of the month. End of this month.
You go to your spring break is the end of...
No, we're heading down to Elko on the 28th of January.
Oh, very soon. Mm-hmm. Okay. How long is the whole trip?
We leave Tuesday, January 28th, and then we come back Saturday, February 1st.
Okay. So this is a pretty intense trip. Yeah. And have you done something like this before?
This is a totally new experience to me, and I'm very excited to be able to participate in this. I figured it was my senior year, and I'd like to try something new.
What are you doing next year? Do you know yet?
I'm actually planning on doing some military service next year.
Okay, and what did you do for your senior project this year?
I volunteered with a program called Junior Beach Lifeguarding through the Sunset Empire Parks and Recreational District Seaside, where I work.
Right.
And we had a group of 17 kids that we basically showed them the ropes on how to be a beach lifeguard and took them out and surfed and just, had a lot of fun.
You work there?
I'm a head lifeguard at the pool.
Really? Oh, wow. That's wonderful. New generations. It's very exciting. Okay, so that was Tim Berquist, and we have Mark Mizell, who teaches at Seaside and who, together with John Broderick, started this wild and crazy thing of going to cowboy poets and finding out what they're all about. And then John is one of the people who started the Fisher Poets Gathering here on the coast, which has just been wonderful. It's one of my favorite. And KMUN... broadcasts it for a couple of nights, so it's really a part of the whole system. Okay, so folks, Chamber in Cannon Beach, 7 to 8:30 Tuesday night, the 14th. Letterbuck Chili Feed Review. Get your chili and get ready to enjoy some really good music. And is your comedy stuff funny, Tim?
I certainly hope so.
Okay, well, we won't ask you for a preview because that would kind of kill it.
Well, maybe
it's kind of needs to be a little bit with the audience and everything. So thank you so much for coming in, both of you, and have a fabulous trip to Elko, Nevada. Is that, if somebody is listening right now and says, oh my God, I would love to do that, can they get in on it or do they have to be a student or...
Well, in terms of this trip with us, everything's pretty well locked in. I've already paid for all the tickets and all the, everything.
Do people stay at a hotel?
Yeah. Okay. The first night is on the train, sleeping on the train. Next two nights are in a hotel, and then the last night we got to catch the train at 3:00 in the morning, so we're going to stay up at the Folklife Center. They're having a jam session, and
we're
going to do that until the train comes. Then the Folklife Center van's going to take us down to the train station.
Great!
But hey, Carol, I just wanted to thank you.
you bet. Well, thank you. I'm delighted that you're keeping this going. I think it's a fantastic way of broadening horizons for our students, and also putting together these, the ranchers and the cowboys be friends or something. So this is the fishermen and the cowboys be friends. And that's terrific. And Tim, are you taking your drums with you for...
I'm not sure if we'll be taking any drums.
You could take one of those things, and just bang on it.
Yeah, it's certainly an option.
Yeah.
Bring some spoons, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, last week I had a percussionist in here, and he played the typewriter.
Really?
Yes, and he was playing across the river. He's a professional musician. I was amazed, and it sounded great. So, I play percussion, too. I play washboard. He plays typewriter. You never know. Okay, thank you so much, Mark Mizell, Tim Berquist, from the Seaside High School Letterbuck Chili Feed Review. And let's stay tuned. I have some music from Jackson Andrews, who plays every Saturday art walk, and he plays over at Charlie's Chowder House. Have a listen. KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook.
I see the fog burn away. I love a bright sunny day. I hum a song and walk along the river walk. As the tide goes out to sea, the river meets its destiny. I hum a song and walk along the river walk. If the strife in life drags you down in some hole, a little stroll can mellow the soul. I see the ships go out to sea. I think about their destiny. I hum a song and walk along the river walk. The river walk does much more than wear down your shoes. The river walk can conquer the blues. So when I'm dealing with the blues, I just put on my walking shoes. I hum a song and walk along the river walk.
And that is Jackson Andrews from right here in Astoria. And that's his new album, Homegrown Fantasy. And that one goes out to all the people who are working hard to keep that riverfront of ours beautiful for everyone, locals and visitors. And give us a chance to keep seeing it. It's so special. We are so, so lucky. Well, speaking of lucky, I grabbed Angela. I tried to get her yesterday, but Angela Calvin Peterson has a schedule. I don't even understand. Nobody seems to know what your schedule is. You have three. You're in three different schools.
Three different schools, and then I work another job at the Conservatory of Music downtown Astoria.
No wonder I couldn't find you. Yeah. I called where did I call? I can't even remember. And I said, where do you think she might be? And they had no idea. The woman was waiting. I said, why don't you just give me the numbers for all the schools?
Yeah.
And I'll just call them. But then I was able to catch you because you have a whole bunch of your students from the middle school and the high school, I believe, are going to be performing the very same night as the Letterbuck Chili Feed Review, whom I just spoke to, which is in Cannon Beach. And your students are going to be performing an orchestral concert at Astoria High School.
At the high school.
And this was scheduled for December, is that right?
Yeah, and we got snowed out.
You got snowed out.
Yeah.
Well, be thankful you're not scheduled for tonight because you could get rained out.
Or winded out, yeah.
Winded, yeah. Blown away.
Blown away.
Especially if people are trying to bring their instruments with them. And So for those who haven't met you, the other thing that Angela is on Arts Live and Local for is the Columbia River Symphony, because she and her husband, who is the conductor, started that. And they have a very active life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't get much downtime.
No, that's okay. That we like it that way.
Yeah, yeah. You're still young. Keep your energy while you got it. So what's going to be happening on Tuesday night? What time and what? Who's going to be playing what?
Well, this is a pretty special event. This is the largest group of string players in one place, probably in the county, as far as I can tell. There's 110 about
what?
6th through 12th grade.
Wait, they're
students.
Not all going to be on the stage at one time.
Though. Not this time, but it has been done before. I didn't do it for this concert, but maybe in the spring. But we have done that before, but they each present what they've been working on through the semester. And as I tell the parents, every concert, every year gets better. This is the best I've seen since I've been here. And the program has grown so much. The middle school, when I came...
When did you come?
2007.
Okay.
And I had 15 in the middle school, and now I have 90. So it's great. And the important thing is...
Is this all strings?
All strings. All piano. That's percussion. But but it's pianos and violins, violas, cellos, and bass.
It's, wow, it's amazing. That's huge.
It is huge.
In 6 years, that is huge. What happened?
Oh.
Was there a program before, but
there
it was,
just
kind of not
it was,
happening
It was
much?
Struggling a little bit, and you know, the budget didn't help. That was a scary time.
Yeah. Well,
but we just fought through
usually
it.
Usually is. So.
Yeah, it's a very scary time, but we just fought through it. And I think at this point, you know, the kids put all the work in, and listeners need to realize that all the music that you hear on the radio starts where these kids are at. So going to this concert and supporting them by with your attendance. And by the way, it's a free concert, Astoria High School, 7 p.m.
7.
And I work really hard to make it about an hour. I tell the kids I aim for 45 minutes, and it usually ends up an hour and 15 minutes.
Uh-huh.
So I'll be very honest if it's about that long. And supporting these kids is going to ensure that your grandchildren and your children have music on the radio to listen to, because that's where your artists come from. So we're just borrowing music
from future generations.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So you work in the elementary school as well?
I do. I do general music, and we start learning about how music is put together.
What grades do you start?
Three through five for the elementary. And in fifth grade, they start... branching out between choir, band, and orchestra.
So do all the students in 3 to 5 take this, or?
Most of them.
They do.
There's some students that go and do some special reading or math skills, but I get most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Good for us. Good for Astoria School District for supporting this, because, and we were just talking about it in the last, you know, and you and I have talked about it before. We've said we know how important it is for giving us musicians to hear on the radio, but also what a gift to the children themselves, whether or not they stick to it for their life professionally.
Yeah,
they have a gift,
yes,
and it is enormous. It builds confidence, cooperation. There's
all sorts of teamwork.
All sorts of things come from this that people don't even think about.
Yes.
So you don't even have to love music. You have to love education and the value of your community, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
So you start with from 3 to 5, and then they start branching off.
If they're interested in starting earlier, I take them at the conservatory as a private student and direct them where they need to go. But in sixth grade, they break into the three different groups, and I focus on the strings.
Who does the vocal?
Vocal is Matthew Pierce.
Okay.
And he is also middle school and high school. And then Scott Cuthbert does band.
Okay.
Middle school and high school.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Matt's been in, but not recently, but he's been in also.
Yeah.
For vocal. So, okay. So are some of those younger kids going to be on, or is this just the middle school?
In
this concert? I just had the middle school and the high school.
Oh, not the third through fifth. No third through fifth this round. But I try really hard to set up the concert in a way that the younger kids can see the older kids.
Mm,
the parents can see this as well. So,
nice.
And a compliment I receive after a concert is, wow, you can really hear the difference between these groups. And I can hear the difference from year to year. It's just a huge growth. In fact, this concert, I felt we were ready to start working on some multi-movement works. So instead of a piece that only has one movement, it's just like last year we did, for example, the Rosin Eating Zombies from Outer Space, which is just one piece. This year we're focusing on multi-movement. So we're doing four movements. Well, there's four movements of the Chamber Suite in D by Handel. We're doing the first two at the high school level, and then the middle schoolers are doing Apollo Suite by Merle Isaac, and that's four movements, and they're all very different, mm-hmm. and it showcases a lot of different skills.
Do the kids need to read music?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
And they start doing that.
Jealous.
I really focus on. Getting them to read that music, because once you can read the music, you can play anything.
You can play anything, and you can sing also.
Yes.
Because I know, like with the North Coast Chorale, which is starting up again this Tuesday, and the Cannon Beach Chorus and stuff, you don't have to sight sing.
Yeah.
But boy, does it help.
Oh, yeah. It helps.
It helps mentally. Tremendously. Yeah. and you learn about timing as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
It helps your enjoyment and also the product of the music in the end. Mm. So, yeah.
So it helps you appreciate hearing music as well, even if it's not classical.
Yes.
Even when you hear whatever you're hearing.
Yeah.
And we do hear so many musicians talking about how they started, whether it was in school and or studying classical music.
Yes.
Usually piano or violin.
Yeah.
And now they're playing headbanging music, and I don't even get it. But
other
people love it, and you know they're playing it well.
Yes.
Because they're disciplined. They've got the discipline. So.
Or writing their own music, too. Like Kim Angelis.
Right.
Yeah, doing her own stuff.
Right. Yes. And as a matter of fact, that's funny, because we just mentioned Israel Nebergren. I have a piece of his lined up here, because he's another one who writes his own music with on guitar.
Yeah.
So what happens? Do you have any tracking devices on some of your students who get through high school? Do many of them play for all 4 years of high school?
Yeah, they try to. You know, there's some classes that end up clashing against the music class, because I am at three schools, so it goes. It's hard to keep my schedule, so I'm kind of a scheduling problem. But the kids try to stay in as long as they can. Every once in a while, they have to take a class, and then they come back.
Oh, they have to do something academic, even maybe.
Yeah, and I do try to keep track of my kids after they leave, and whether or not they, in general, whether or not they choose to study music in college. A lot of them are still keeping it in their lives, which is really important, because when they leave, I know that maybe when they're 80, they will pick up that instrument again. Yes.
And they'll come back to Astoria.
No,
it's true. So many people have come here for many reasons, but having all these music groups for older people as well as for their progeny, it's terrific.
Yes.
So thank you so much,
Angela
Calvin Peterson, at the Astoria School District Orchestra Concert. Is this Tuesday, January 14th, begins at 7, and it is
free to the public.
Free to the public, and it's at the Astoria High School Auditorium. So if you need any more information, you can call one of the schools and find out what's going on, or just talk to any kid in town. They'll probably tell you.
Yeah.
That's great. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You bet. Okay. So is there enough going on? There's more happening. And part of it's tonight, and my last guest is here. But I do want to play you a tune. Since we've mentioned Israel, and shout out to the Nebergren family, wherever they may be. And this one's called Two Towns From Me. Thanks for being here. Me is, in this case, Carol at KMUN and KTCB.
Remember the war, living in the half that you cannot see, and walking a line, a thinning tide, and stepping into deep, watching water thread my sleeve. Would I pull from underneath? We'll tie it down, wait it out, and hope our memories hold. Lead white nail driven down 100 years ago. Feeling wheels on my old road. Feeling bought for what I sold. I had a dream you were two towns from me. Got to sleep, spent the whole night running. Their breath and live in between. Hollow bones, knowing both what they want and what they need. How I want that mystery. Let me dive till I believe. Dream you were two towns from me. Got to sleep, spent the whole night, had a dream we were nothing more than caught up in our own lives, honey.
Well, that is Blind Pilot with one of Israel's songs. And Two Towns From Me. We got more than that here. And if I had been more together, I would have played Israel earlier and Blind Pilot earlier and put on a hip-hop tune for now to introduce my last guest because that is one of the hats she wears. Well, I don't think she wears hats, actually. That is one of the pair of earrings she wears, perhaps. Well, Lita Imarisha is here with me, professor at PSU with, let's see, I did take notes here, in the Black Studies department with PSU and at Oregon State University, Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies. So you can see she has fascinating stories to tell. And we here in Astoria have been extremely fortunate to have her come here and tell two of her stories. And that's because my other guests, Drew Herzig. Hi, Drew.
Hi, Carol.
I think they know you.
Yeah. They've heard me before.
Well, Lita, were you here on the radio with me before?
No, my first time.
Oh, my God, she's a radio virgin. Oh, that's probably it. Okay, that would have been hip-hop for sure. That's the one thing we haven't gotten you here for, isn't it? The
yes.
Hip-hop program. Maybe someday. But the presentations have been fabulous. The Lower Columbia Diversity Project has sponsored and brought Walida in. Actually, I guess the sponsoring is the Oregon Humanities.
Yes.
Is that how you've come here?
And we're the hosting group.
Hosting, that's the word. And this time it's a double host because the Astor Library Friends Association are co-hosting with Lower Columbia Diversity Project. And the name of the subject this time is Blueprints for Utopia, Science Fiction and Social Change. This is happening tonight at 6 p.m., which is an early time, so be sure you're ready for that. Walida, what does that mean? Tell us.
Well, first, thanks so much for having me, Carol. Very excited to be here for my first time.
Yes.
And I just want to thank Drew and the Lower Columbia Diversity Project for bringing me out this time and the times before.
What did you do? I know the first time was the black population in Oregon.
Right. I did my Oregon Black History Program, and then I did Alternatives to Incarceration.
Right. So. That was the same. I was at both of them. They're excellent. Excellent presentations, and I can't recommend enough. I'm just somewhat amused that Walida can cover so many different subjects, right, Drew?
Yes,
and
amazing.
So well,
yes, yes.
And engagingly. So, but I did catch this that you are a spoken word artist, and that made sense to me because you're good.
Thank you.
Tell us what Blueprints for Utopia, Science Fiction and Social Change. What does it mean?
Well, I think that, you know, science fiction is the highest selling, you know, genre currently in films. You know, every book from The Hunger Games, you know, on is sci-fi, fantasy. And I think it's important to think about these magical worlds, these fantastical worlds, these possible futures that we're creating and the impact that they have on now. And I think that coming out of these ideas, we can actually use science fiction to help us in changing the world right now. So what are the visions that actually embody the principles that we have? And then how do we begin to dream those futures and then write them into being now?
Mm. Whoa. Okay. Boy, see, you packed a lot in there. Now, let's kind of tease that apart here. Even starting with science fiction has been around for a long time. Are we talking about the same science fiction? Is there a difference in what's happened with that? Or are you using the term in a more general sense?
The term science fiction is a general sense term. I mean, I use it to mean... you know, I think sometimes my nerd people get into, well, technically that's not science fiction because there's not enough scientific explanation. And I'm like, we're not going to do that. So I co-edit an anthology of radical science fiction written by organizers called Octavia's Brood, Science Fiction Stories from Social Justice Movements. And my co-editor, Adrienne Marie Brown, and I have developed the term visionary fiction to kind of encompass all of, you know, science fiction, speculative fiction, fantasy, alternative histories, alternative timelines. So we don't have to argue with our beloved nerd friends, but also to differentiate it from this mainstream kind of science fiction we're seeing, which often replicates the world around us, replicates the power dynamics, replicates this feeling of waiting for someone else to come and save us, right? That these films always have, you know, the protagonist, the hero, who is usually, you know, a straight white man who is coming and the rest of us cower, you know, when the asteroids or the aliens or the tsunami or whatever it is coming to destroy us, we just cower and hope against all hope that he can save us. And our idea of visionary fiction is actually that it's all of our responsibility to dream. It's all of our responsibility to save ourselves and each other. And it's all of our responsibility to build those new worlds and to start building them now.
Amen. A woman, sister. Yeah. Yeah. So you've done this anthology. Can you give us kind of a sketch of what this might look like? In other words, what takes it out of what's going on now with people who are presently activists mm-hmm. and working in social justice? So how would you translate that or... I'm looking for a mathematical term where you move it into a science or an imagination.
Yeah, I'm a writer, not a mathematician, so your term would have been lost anyway. I think that, you know, the powerful thing for us is having organizers and activists writing this is because they know these issues intimately. They know the complexities of the issues. I think sometimes the problems with science fiction is that these complexities get flattened out. And I think when you're in it every day and dealing with those complexities, you're able to bring them. So one example is a story by a writer from the East Coast, Danny McLean, and it's called Homing Instinct. And it's basically just a little bit into the future where there's been such ecological devastation and lack of, you know, sort of oil and gas resources.
Energy, all kinds
right,
of, yeah.
That the United States government institutes a ban on travel, basically. You get allotted a very small amount of travel points each month, and you can build them up. And so basically the protagonist of the story is talking to, you know, her friends about the idea becomes, where do you make home, right? That you have to pick one place that you have, you know, it would take you 10 years to save up to go from, you know, LA to, you know, to Chicago, let alone to go internationally. Mm-hmm. So the idea becomes, where do you make home? You know, does the government have the right to tell us when and where we make home? And are there third options? And I think that's one of the things that's so powerful about Danny's piece and other pieces is that, you know, we're often told it's either or, it's one or the other. It's pick the lesser of two evils. Mm-hmm. I think the amazing thing about science fiction is it breaks down all of the barriers, all of the boundaries, mm-hmm. and says anything is possible. If you can dream it, then we can talk about it. And so I think stories like Danny's, you know, not to give away the ending, mm-hmm. Is about saying, well, we don't just want one third option. We want infinite options. And so what are those? Let our minds run free, and then we can actually begin moving towards them, because we can't move towards a goal if we can't see it.
Yeah, and I love the idea of asking the people who are involved in the movements mm-hmm. to be the ones to put these out there yeah. rather than we're working so hard and spending all our time on, which is, I think, part of the whole idea, isn't it? Is to keep, so we don't have time to dream and don't have time to look ahead and be hopeful and thoughtful and imaginative. So is this, now, do you teach a class in this or do you?
I have taught a class in the past called Race and Gender in Science Fiction Film, and I've taught science fiction literature.
Whoa. Where are you? You know, I just don't understand. You are so all over the map. And if I hadn't been to your two presentations, I'd say, yeah, well. But I have, and you are so in-depth and thorough in what you give us that I'm wondering what your background is that has brought all of these things. Do you just keep, when something, a new idea, for example, comes to you, then you just dive into it and study up on it? And
yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of it is about the pieces that have impacted me or have, you know, have drawn my attention and captivated me. I mean, I've been a nerd my entire life. I
where did you grow up?
I grew up all over. I grew up on military bases, but you know, I grew up watching especially Star Trek, you know. I speak a little Klingonese.
Oh, well, there, then you are. You're qualified.
Yes. My nerd creds are in order.
You're way ahead.
But I think the other piece that's really useful about science fiction and the idea of visionary fiction is that to create a full vision for the future, we actually have to see that all of these issues and identities intersect. So it's not something where, you know, Oregon Black history is completely separate from, you know, the current prison system is completely separate mm-hmm. from, you know, gender justice mm-hmm. and sexual identity justice. That it's, you know, I think that we often see the world in these kind of boxes.
Compartmentalized.
And exactly. Yeah. And so I think we, none of us live our lives like that. Mm-hmm. None of us are, you know, say, well, you know, I don't say, well, today I'm going to be a woman and maybe tomorrow I'll be Black and then the day after I'll be a professor. And maybe the day after that I'll be a nerd, right? We are all of our identities at the same time. The world interacts with us in that way. And so when we think about the visions for the future, we have to begin to see those intersections. And I think science fiction is uniquely positioned to allow us to begin to break down those boxes.
So when someone is creating science fiction, the progressive kind that you're talking about, how much reality, I'm making quotation marks, existing has to be there in order to make it work for you, in order to be able to move it ahead, for people to be able to identify right. or bring it back or whatever.
I mean, I personally feel like other than, you know, we have some ideas about visionary fiction, but they're really about kind of the aesthetics that you're and the vision that you're putting into it. So, you know, are we breaking this idea of the one lone, you know, white man hero? And are we actually showing that change happens from the bottom up, not the top down? Are we showing that those folks who are marginalized in our society, actually, when we move marginalized folks to the center, it makes all of our lives better? So it's those kind of values that we believe that visionary fiction has certain values, but other than that, you know, we want the boundaries to be as open as, you know, parallel universes, so infinite possibilities.
And right? And I, having experienced your workshops, I'd have to say that you make this fun, too. And so I'm thinking when you're writing or editing or whatever, it isn't dry.
No, I mean, I think that's the thing that we really wanted to make sure when we pulled together the anthology Octavia's Brood, is that we wanted to create, first and foremost, incredibly compelling science fiction stories that encompassed visionary fiction. We didn't want to create political messages that were couched in science fiction terms. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the writers were incredibly supportive and amazing to engage in a very collaborative editing process. Some of these pieces we've actually edited for 2 years back and forth with the writers to get it to a place where all of us feel like not only does this encompass the values and the vision that we want, it is, you know, the best. Yeah, it is the most polished that it can be in terms of writing.
And is this already published?
No, okay. It's in progress, so it will come out June 2014.
Darn, I was going to say, I hope you're going to have some tonight, because I want to
No, well, tonight I actually have some of my books of poetry. So I just released a book of poetry a couple months ago called Scars and Stars.
Congratulations. Wonderful.
Thank you.
So what else do you do? You are your professor, your writer. I mentioned a spoken word artist. How would you describe that?
I mean, I create performance poetry. And so I write pieces and then engage in a performance way of presenting them to the audience.
Do you use musicians as well sometimes? Or
sometimes
not?
I have. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm actually working on a one woman kind of experience. It's not quite a play that involves multimedia, film, images, songs.
Okay. Tell us when it's done. We'll have you back.
It's, actually, you know,
that won't be part of the humanities. That'll be my guest is Walida Imarisha, who is all of the above that we've been talking about. You can experience one of these workshops. Well, the very one that she's brought here this time, Blueprints for Utopia, Science Fiction and Social Change, tonight at 6 p.m. at the Astoria Library, which is on 10th and Exchange. It is free to the public. It's part of the Oregon Humanities. Okay. It's being sponsored then by the LCDP and the library.
Yes.
The Astor Library Friends Association, Alpha.
Yes.
Oh, Alpha.
It's part of their after-hours program that they've instituted last year and are doing more after-hours programming at the library. It's been fantastic.
Yes, it has. They've had all kinds of presentations, music and all kinds of music as well as speakers. And, this is exciting then. I'm pleased to hear that this is an independent, because we want more of you as much as possible.
Yes.
So this is, you know, I had jotted down how identity shapes our conceptions and dreams of the future. So it sounds as though the word shape is in there. I'm thinking of shape shifting in a way, because we're going forward with our dreams and then bringing them back into the present. And you use the word collaboration, which seems to me to be a very important issue in any kind of social change. So, okay, what else do you want to tell us? We have about 30 seconds. What else do you want to tell us?
I'm just really excited to be here and nerd out with folks, and I'm really, really thankful for the Lower Columbia Diversity Project to bring.
And I have to say, I would never in 100 years have thought to call Walida Imarisha a nerd. How about you, Drew?
No, never
occurred to me, but I'll think about it now.
She wears it with pride, by the way.
Definitely, yes, and beauty. Yeah. We'll see you tonight, 6 p.m. at the Astoria Library, 10th and Exchange. Thank you so much
for
coming
here.
And I just want to let you know a couple of other happenings that are going on tonight. We have Dave Drury is at the Living Room Wine Cafe in Seaside Friday and Saturday, 6:30 to 9:30. The Voodoo Room starts at 9 with Bar K Buckaroos. Don't be frightened off. That's Brad Griswold, our good banjo friend, who's playing just about every night with different bands. Rain Magazine today was the deadline. Hope you got your stuff in. And Nancy Slavin and Ilya Seely are at the Bay City Arts Center tonight at 7, and then they'll be at the Cannon Beach Library Saturday at 2, Sunday Manzanita Cloud and Leaf, and Naomi and Rob are at the Adrift tonight, and the Adrift has music every night, as do many of the venues in this area. Tomorrow is Astoria Art Walk. We heard from some of the people. The North Coast Printmakers Collective and the Winter Print Show with printmakers from Portland. This is all tomorrow, 5 to 8 at the River Sea. Imogen, Caffeine Mythology with Ann Gurgich, and that's music from Portland. Outsider Art, Tempo Gallery, Elizabeth Bond Zimmerman. There's Brad Griswold playing there. Kala has the Zodiac with Sterling. Fernhill is doing a celebration of life. My heart goes to you. From 11 to 8 tomorrow for Grandson and lots of other venues in town. And it is time for me to move on. Northwest Artist Guild is at the Gallery 504 in Long Beach, which is a delightful place to be. Scott Pemberton at the Fort George Sunday. And Sunday Afternoon Live in Raymond. With Chris Anderson. Thanks so much, folks, for being here. Blessings to Sid and